Hello, my name is Bill Kladke, and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Ms. Becky Wagner, who is Executive Director of Advocates for Children and Youth. And Becky's here today to talk to us about various important things about the youth in our area and how we can help, which definitely is needed. So, Becky, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's been a long time since we had an interview, and I wanted to come on, and I wanted you to come on and bring us up to date with all the stuff that your organization is doing, which is quite a bit. So,
thank you. Well, you know, the basic mission of Advocates for Children and Youth is to improve the experiences and lives of Maryland's children. We consider ourselves every child's ally. Mm-hmm. We work with government, stakeholders, community members, elected officials, trying to improve every system that touches a child's life. We were found in 1987, so we're nearly 30 years old. Mm-hmm. At that point in time, exclusively here in the city of Baltimore. So prominent citizens saying somebody has to have a voice for children because certainly no one's speaking up for them. And yeah. So from that, we moved to a broad array of issues that we work with.
That's great. And so I guess your role as executive director is to make everything work, right?
Yeah. I have the thrill and the challenge of keeping the organization alive and thriving, and then also getting to do a little bit of the policy work, which in my heart is why I am so glad to be here at Advocates for Children and Youth.
Yeah, because you understand the system enough to know that unless somebody does it, everything falls through the cracks.
That's the truth. I mean, you know, we have to be a place where people are proud to work, where there's, you know, a respectable wage in a nonprofit. That's a legitimate question today. Yeah. We want to attract qualified people. I want people to fall in love with this work so that when it's my turn to move forward or step aside, there's somebody saying, that's what I want to do with my life.
Yeah, sounds great. It sounds great. How can someone find out more information about your programs and services?
Well, we have a wonderful website, www.acy.org. Mm-hmm. I encourage everyone all the time, when you go on there, there are lots of interesting things to read about, learn about. Sign up for our newsletter because we won't inundate your email box, but you'll be hearing on a pretty regular basis what's happening, whether it's the legislative session or whether it's our distinguished speakers luncheon or whether it's research that we're doing.
Thank you. Thank mm-hmm. you. Yeah, it really is. I mean, there are excellent resources on that site. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Let's talk more about your programs and services. I know you folks do a lot of different things.
Yes. So we work in five core areas. And the why five instead of one, you might ask. We know that children don't grow up in silos. Right. And so we know that we have to work across the field. So we work in child welfare, juvenile justice, education, health, and economic sufficiency. In these, we do research for best practices, what works, what doesn't work, and then we advocate for what works, and then finally we monitor implementation of any legislation or new regulation that could impact kids.
That's very important, as we were talking a little bit before mm-hmm. we started the show. And it's something I think that perhaps we need to spend another minute or so on to reinforce that for folks, because
sure.
that's something that I think that a lot of people figure that once a law is passed, that's it.
Right.
We're done. We're done, and we got great improvements.
So I have a terrific example for you.
Please.
A couple years ago, we passed the tuition waivers benefit for children in foster care, mm-hmm. Meaning that they could come out and go to community college or a state college, and the tuition cost would be waived. Well, that's a wonderful benefit,
right.
But if the caseworkers are not aware of it, if that information hasn't filtered down to where the caseworkers are doing that on-the-ground work, it doesn't get accessed. And so Melissa Rock, our child welfare director, has incorporated into her work plan training of caseworkers. And we've trained in the past year probably 300 to 350 caseworkers. So you might imagine
wow.
how informed now those caseworkers are. And we expect We're a data organization, so we follow, mm-hmm. did this improve? So we expect to see over the next 18 months a significant uptick in foster youth who've applied for that tuition waiver benefit.
That's wonderful. And that also means that the citizen benefits, because as we know too well, and I'm sure you could give me more statistics than I'd ever dream of, foster youth, folks that go through that system, have an awful lot of, a lot of them have a lot of difficulties in their subsequent lives.
They certainly do. And if you look at every institution, and sadly I could tell you homeless shelters or detention systems, or jobless, or, you know, the list of all the poor outcomes you can name, the percentage of former foster youth is exceptionally high. Mm. And so we know that if we could give these kids that next best start, truly no one should have to, you know, fall out of their family system or their family system that can't care for them. But when that happens, they are the children of the state. We are their parents. And right. So we need to take that as seriously as we take caring for our very own children.
Absolutely. And that means attention,
yes,
to what's happening with the implementation of that particular rule.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Yeah. I know that you also do an awful lot in the legislative sessions.
Yes. And this year, it's a robust year. Mm-hmm. We have issues in each of our issue areas. I do the economic sufficiency work at the organization. And why is that important? We know that if parents could support their families, half of our kids' problems would go away. And so for that reason, this year, we've worked on increasing the earned income tax credit. We're working on earned sick leave, which is a real hot button item all through the country. And it's finally Maryland's turn, we believe, ultimately. We've worked on increasing funding for school breakfast and school lunch. We're advocating, not as successfully yet, on after-school programming. I mean, I believe that anyone who knows the plight of children, and I could give you a little data about
please.
That.
Yes, please.
So we have, in Maryland, we have more than 400,000 families who rely on food stamp benefits.
It's 400,000 families.
400,000.
Wow.
Which is enormous. And what that does is that means we have more than 390,000 children who are counting on school for their breakfast and their lunch. So
that means any breakfast and any
lunch.
Any lunch. Wow.
And as we've made it through a winter that's been good and bad and good and bad, you have to think about when school is postponed or delayed, likely those 400,000 kids are not going to have a breakfast or lunch that day. So while we're complaining about the roads, maybe we could elevate our thinking a little bit and start thinking about what it means for kids in school.
Yeah, and think about what that means to those kids in terms of their learning. In terms of their behavior? I mean,
yes.
The studies
are all over the place, but the one thing they all agree on is that children who are fed do better in math scores, there's less truancy, there's better classroom behavior. And I always say, even if it's only in your own self-interest, think if you have a child or a grandchild sitting in a classroom next to a hungry child, and consider then what the disruptors are for learning in that classroom.
Yeah.
You know, we're asking teachers to do important jobs in the classroom, and they can't also be social workers, and they can't also make sure all their kids are fed. It's a big job to make that classroom hum.
That's for certain. My wife is a teacher.
Okay.
And I can tell you firsthand from hearing from her that controlling kids and fostering, as you said, a good learning environment. Mm-hmm. is really difficult when people are acting out, as every parent knows.
Sure,
frankly, and every kid knows, because there's too much of it.
That's right.
And this is one of the ways that we can do something about it.
As well, in the education arena, mm-hmm. we're working very carefully with the city schools and with the state disciplinary reform schools, so that kids are not suspended and expelled at the rates that that are occurring right now. Certainly, they're higher in the city than anywhere mm-hmm. else, but curiously followed by a couple rural counties on the Eastern Shore.
Really?
So, yes. So, proportionately, what we're looking at is we're coming from a period where there was no tolerance, zero tolerance, to we were successful in saying that zero tolerance is not solving our problem. Kids need to be in school, learning, and accountable. So we're looking to change the school climate in a way that a child that is misbehaving, many of it developmentally appropriate, that there are ways that don't have to include handcuffing a child and taking them out of middle school or moving them into the detention system, which is essentially making school that pipeline to prison. But in fact, there are ways that a school climate can change and methods that can keep kids in school and accountable. So we're doing some important work in that area.
And I guess part of the solution, of course, is money. And part of the solution is changing some of the rules and some of the attitudes.
That's right. And so regarding the funding, I mean, we know here in the city, the funding is an increasing challenge mm-hmm. For our public schools. There's the Bridge to Excellence Commission that has spent 13 years assuring that there is mandatory equitable funding in the city and the state. That said, the next commission, which is actually was just passed in the legislature, that next commission will determine, is it enough? Where do we need to have more funds? And mm-hmm. we certainly are going to be doing work on the wealth factor that they use, the poverty proxy that they use. We know that these kids need wraparound services. We need behavioral health care, substance use. We need local sites where kids are getting the services that are going to make them healthy and whole. Yeah. So that's where our budget advocacy comes in.
Right, right. Thank you. And well said. And I guess we fundamentally have a choice. Do we want to attack problems mm-hmm. once they get bad enough so that mm-hmm. crimes are committed and people are hurt permanently and we have an exploding prison population?
Yes.
Or do we want to work on trying to do something about these things beforehand?
Exactly. So if you're looking at cost benefit, we know the numbers and the numbers tell us that getting kids healthy, making neighborhoods safe, making a school environment where kids are going to thrive, where they're going to have job opportunities when they graduate and additional education opportunities, we know that that's cost effective. What we do know is if we continue the path to incarceration and the national problem of mass incarceration, if we continue to think that's the solution, we're going to have a deficit in this country that we can't begin to imagine.
Yeah, yeah. And it will be in one-way expenses.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How can someone who is listening help?
Okay, so usually, you know, there are lots of important direct service providers doing important work for kids.
Yep.
We're not quite so direct. We're sort of the systems reform people, so that question is always a challenge. What I like to say is, in a direct service situation, you might provide a backpack for a child. We're trying to create health and wholeness in a family so mom and dad can provide a backpack for a child. We want to kind of reinvent that path we've gone down mm-hmm. for systems reform. Mm-hmm. And so when I say to someone, sign up for the email on the website, there are a number of things that allows you to do. It allows you to click on a button that will give you the chance to communicate with your delegate or your senator. For example, our earned sick leave bill. You know, there are over 700,000 people in the state of Maryland that cannot earn an hour of sick leave. So click on that button, go to our website, because it's an important opportunity to say you did something important.
Very, very good thing that we need to do right away after this show. Could you give us that contact information one more time, please?
Sure. www.acy.org.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And unfortunately, that's all we have time for in Living in Baltimore for today. I want to thank our guest, Ms. Becky Wagner, who is Executive Director of Advocates for Children and Youth. 410-547-9200, www.acy.org, for being our guest today. Thank you, Becky.
Thank you.
Keep up your good work for all of us.
Thanks.
And for living in Baltimore, I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.